Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have on the show the Democratic candidate for governor of Iowa. She's Deidre DeGere, and she's taken time to be on to discuss her candidacy today. Deidre, thank you. I know you're really busy this time with the election about 90 days away, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be on with our listeners today.
Absolutely, Robin. I just enjoy, you know, that folks are taking the time to talk with folks about things that are important that are happening in our state. And so it is my privilege to be on your broadcast to share that today. Excuse me, podcast. I'm a broadcast news major. That's what I did in college. So like, broadcast comes out naturally, but podcast.
Well, it's actually broadcast and podcast, but, you know, that's fine. I really appreciate you taking the time. I like to ask all candidates a very simple question, why they're running. And in the context of answering that, feel free to talk about your background and experience, what qualifies you to be governor.
So I came to Iowa when I was 18, just seeking an education. I'm originally from Jackson, Mississippi, and I went to high school and middle school in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so I kind of say that I did my own great migration up to the state. I was a broadcast news and politics major, and Drake was and still is one of the greatest schools for both of those majors because of everything that happens in our state related to politics. And so that's what I was coming for. And what I really found was a home. I decided to make Iowa my home because I just saw incredible opportunities that were right in front of me that I could take on and challenge myself and at the end of the day also better help the community that had given so much to me. I was able to start a small business while I was in college. I was able to start a nonprofit while I was in college because I saw opportunities to help people in my community. The small business started during the recession. We saw at that time folks were getting laid off from their jobs and had no choice but to become entrepreneurs. And that process that helped me to start my business during the recession better helped me to be able to help the business owners during the onset of the pandemic. And so when I think about those pathways for me to start a business, to start a nonprofit, to get a great education, the way I see it now is that those pathways are getting smaller and smaller for the vast majority of Iowans, and not just to start businesses and nonprofits and not just to get an education, but we're seeing those pathways get smaller related to access to health care, access to an economy that allows you to be a sustained individual in your community and be able to provide for your family, put a roof over your head. And I want to interrupt that cycle because we've been better before in our state under both Republican and Democratic leadership. And if there is an opportunity for us to interrupt the trajectory, the backwards trajectory of this state, this is the election cycle that we do it in. I never thought I would ever run for anything, let alone governor of a state. But what I've always thought was something that my parents really emboldened in me was that I had gifts and talents, and my role on this earth was to figure out what those things were and to give it to the public good. That's what I've been taught. And now are those moments where I see clearly the potential that we have in this state because I've been a part of the good that's happened in this state, and I want to see it to come to fruition. This state is not short of vision. We have incredible Iowans all over this state that have solutions to some of the regular everyday issues that we're facing. But needless to say, they need a governor who's aligned with that vision and willing to turn the lights on for them. And so that's why I'm running. I'm willing to put in the work so that we can see a brighter future for this state because I believe Iowans are worth the work.
You mentioned several issues there in your introductory comments, and I've seen your website. You focus on some issues. But let's say you're elected. You take the oath. What are the first three things, the top priorities you see in your administration?
You know, it's no coincidence that our state is home to Iowa Basic Skills Test, right? And I think the first thing that we have to do is get back to the basics of what we've done good to kind of propel this state to be the petri dish for progress that we've always been. And so we've got to fund education. We've got to invest in our education system in such a way that we are doing the number one duty that we should be doing, which is preparing our students for a limitless future. But the other part of it is that we have certain aspects of our state that are in dire condition and in true need of repair. And that comes with a skilled and or educated workforce. Some of that looks like the skills trades and investing in adult learning. And also being able to not only invest in the skills trades, but in invest in our education institutions that are providing opportunities for that, like our community colleges. We also need to prepare our educated workforce for the jobs that require those four-year degrees and master's degrees and other professional degrees. The cost of education is increasing. And the onus of that, especially for our public institutions throughout the state, has been on the state. We used to fund our higher education institutions about a third of their budget, or two-thirds of their budget, excuse me. Now we're at about a third. And the cost of business is not going down. In fact, it's going up. And that cost is being passed on to the student and or their family members. And so that institution is looking less and less appealing for the folks who we need to go through those programs. The other part of investing in education is in K-12. You know, we need to make sure that on the onset of the education process, our students have a fighting chance. The more and more I travel throughout the state, I'm hearing from our kindergarten teachers that our students are coming in less prepared because we've lost access to early childhood education in this state. And the lack of investment is a great deal of reason why. We need to make sure that our 3- and 4-year-olds have at least 30 hours of early childhood education in any given week so that the moment that they get into that kindergarten classroom, the teachers are able to move those students forward, and that we're not seeing the increased decreasing of our third grade reading scores throughout the state. And then the last thing that I'll say is that as it relates to the high school experience, we need to fill 88,000 jobs in the state today. And while high school is meant to prepare our students for a trade school and for college, it should also be intended to prepare our students for work if they just so happen to want to get a job. And we're increasingly seeing that our students do want to get jobs. And we want them to just only have to work one job to make ends meet. And there are plenty of jobs that are in the state that these students, if given access to the training during the high school experience, could take on upon graduation. And so that would be the immediate priority to give our students a fighting chance and to also give our economy a fighting chance by going to that fundamental approach that we've believed in 100 years before Brown versus Board of Education was passed, which was every student deserves access to a quality public education system in the state.
People look at the Iowa economy, and it's like some see it half full, some see it half empty. The unemployment rate's below the national average. But how do you see the Iowa economy? Do you think it's performing well, or is it underperforming? Mm-hmm. And what would you do specifically to kind of improve the performance if you do see it lacking a little bit?
Yeah, you know, when we talk about unemployment numbers, we also have to look at the other indicators that look towards performance. It's one thing to have people in jobs, but look at the performance of the economies that exist in the state and the performances of individuals. You know, just because one has a job doesn't mean that that job is a sustainable wage-paying job. Giving them the opportunity to afford rent or a mortgage, giving them the opportunity to afford food or gas and things of that nature. And so I think about it a little bit more broad. I've worked in the area of workforce development and financial education and small business development, and so I know very astutely the indicators that show whether or not an individual is going to have a sustained lifestyle to live within their means. And it's becoming more and more challenging for Iowans to do so, especially considering the rising cost of things. Every state that touches the state of Iowa pays higher wages than Iowa. And I know we're better than that. I know we're better than the weak minimum wage that we have. And so that is a part of being able to compete in the Midwest. We are educating some of the best and brightest students that this world will ever see, and they're going outside of the state to take on those jobs. We need to make sure that they're prepared, not only prepared to take on those jobs, but the jobs are available in the state that can pay them. The other part of it is when we talk about our economy, I come from the small business perspective on this one. Our small businesses provide jobs for more than 50% of the workforce in this state. And what we're seeing is that because of the rising cost of health care, it is becoming more and more difficult for these small businesses that are well-established in our rural and our urban communities to provide full-time jobs that pay benefits. Health care is tremendously expensive for our small business owners that have 1 to 20 employees. And we need to make sure that that's more affordable because, one, it's giving these small businesses an opportunity to compete with the industries that can provide health care, but it's also providing vibrancy in all of our communities and sustainability for those employees. And so I'd like to work to reduce those health care costs for our small businesses. The other part of it is that we have to increase opportunity for child care. We've lost nearly 40% of our child care providers over the last 2 years. We're already experiencing tremendous child care deserts in the state, and now the state itself is becoming somewhat of a child care desert. And that is preventing the opportunity for folks to get back to work. We know the lack of sustainability in the child care industry through COVID put people back home so that they could tend to their families. And if we expect to see them get back into the workforce, we have to make sure that we strengthen those child care provisions, which is in sync with what I talk about related to education. And then the last thing that I'll say about the economy is that we've got some incredible gems throughout this state that attract people from all over the country and all over the world. And I want to make sure that those gems, continue to shine bright. But at the end of the day, we've got 99 counties in the state. And I want to make sure all 99 counties have an economic development plan that they feel good about that meets the needs of their communities and also ensures that there's a brighter future on the other side, too. So economy is extremely important, but, it's a multi-pronged approach. I think that's going to help us see success in the state.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very delighted to have as my guest today, Deidre DeGiro, who's the Democratic candidate for governor in Iowa. And we've been talking a little bit about her priorities, why she's running, her major priorities, and the state economy. In some ways, she thinks it needs to be improved. I wanted to follow up a little bit on the income part that you mentioned. You mentioned the minimum wage. I wanted to just ask, do you think it needs to be boosted and how high? And then regarding healthcare and childcare, I mean, healthcare, it seems the national government's trying to address that. Does it lend itself to, are there things state government can do in the area of healthcare and childcare to help improve conditions currently?
Yes. So, I don't want to put a dollar amount on the increase in wages because there's a few things that we need to look at here. When people talk about affordability, that is usually subjective, but I really want to put some objectivity to a system that's going to work for folks. I want to make sure that in any given county, we'll know the average wages that people are making per capita in those counties. But I also want us to mesh up the need for housing throughout the state because a lot of the wage component from my vantage point really hinges on affordability of housing. We need to build 50,000 homes in the state today to fulfill the workforce needs, and that is inclusive of every county throughout the state. Once we get in there, we'll really work to see what that number will pan out to be. But I think that it's a little bit more prescribed than what a headline might be for a number. And I want to be very, very intuitive about that. You know, I want to make sure that people don't spend any more than 30% of their annual income on housing. And if we can make sure that we're meeting those metrics and we're not necessarily meeting them, but working towards those metrics, that would be more towards defining affordability from my vantage point. I also want to make sure that people don't spend any more than 15% of their annual income on health care. You know, those are, you know, numbers that have been researched time and time again that help us understand what it means for someone to have economic sustainability and live within their means. But what we're finding, even as you talk about some of the areas in health care, is that we're not, as a state, paying the reimbursement rates that we need to pay to private industry so that they can actually pay some of their folks what they need to pay them. For example, we look at the child care industry. We know we need child care providers in the state, but they also need workers. Here's the challenge. The average child care worker gets paid $26,000 a year. And these workers are teachers in their own right. They are educating our future and helping to train our future. And it's incredibly important that we don't pay them like glorified babysitters. I mean, I can only imagine. I used to read the Babysitter's Club when I was younger, and those girls were getting paid more than what child care providers are getting paid right now. And so we have to come to terms with that reality that, you know, folks aren't going to do the work if we're not going to pay them. And that's a critical need for us for a number of reasons. You know, we talk about another area of our workforce, and that's, you know, our educators and the folks who are in our education ecosystem. We have to make sure that they are getting paid the wages that are competitive and keep them within the state. We don't want to keep losing our educators to our surrounding states. And so at the end of the day, we need to set our state up to be competitive, to keep our workforce here, and to recruit the workforce that needs to happen within the state. And that can happen even as it relates to our healthcare workers. The last thing that I'll say is as it relates to mental health. We haven't increased the reimbursement rates for mental health in 2 decades. Again, the cost of business is going up, and the need for mental health care is tremendous. We have less than 600 beds in the state for a population of 3 million people. You know, under this governor's leadership, we're perpetuating a crisis there. But it's not just a matter of increasing wages. It's also a matter of investments as well. We're sitting on more than a $1.5 billion surplus. This state should have had 6 mental health care access points by July of last year. We have 2, one in Linn County and Johnson County. And so one might think, we just got to address the workforce. No, we also have to address the systems. Under this governor's leadership, she's been starving these systems to the degree in which they are not performing optimally. And Iowans are getting the short end of the stick.
One thing about your background that intrigues me is your background in small business. I've always thought, and I hear this a lot, one of the major criticisms of economic development efforts are governments tend to go after the big employers and poor incentives. Mm-hmm. But yet, as you said earlier, small business provides a significant share of existing employment, and it's often mm-hmm. overlooked. I've always thought, too, small businesses are more likely to be, import-proof, where they can compete better, mm-hmm. not worry about imports as much. But do you have specific mm-hmm. ideas based on your background to try to stimulate the small business entrepreneurial sector in Iowa?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing is one of the things that I mentioned earlier to ensure that small businesses are competitive related to the larger workforce and being able to recruit and offer full-time jobs with benefits. I want to make sure that our small businesses have some affordable health care packages that they can then pass on to their employees. Other things that I would like to see happen with our small businesses, we have a targeted small business program in the state of Iowa, which ensures that we are having a targeted focus on doing business with veteran-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, and individuals who are people of color, those businesses. I want the state to do a stronger job and our public entities of doing a stronger job of supporting those small businesses through the funding or through the procurement of what the state goes through. I think it's a program that's existed for some time. It needs to have a little bit more teeth, and we can have a true focus on making sure that the state actually does business with the small businesses that exist within the state of Iowa. The other thing that I would like to see happen with our small businesses is in line with our small businesses in agriculture. Those are our farmers. We've got a lot of new up-and-coming farmers that can't necessarily afford right now, 400 acres of land or 80 acres of land at that. Some of them can only afford 2 or 3 acres of land. But what we've seen over the last couple of years through the pandemic is that those small farmers can actually make money and make considerable resources in meeting the demands that exist within the state of Iowa. And so I'd like to see a stronger approach to lifting up those new and up-and-coming farmers, and those farmers who have simply just been, farming 20 acres for years and years and decades and have gone unnoticed but have been profitable in finding the markets. I want to make sure that we are not exclusive to one type of small business owner that we normally think of, because our small business owners, our farmers are small business owners in their own right.
You mentioned healthcare several times, and there's a lot of dimensions to that issue, but is there one area in particular you're seeing or hearing about on the trail that is most acute as far as the issues it's creating and that you want to try to address, or is it just going to be a broad-based approach?
It is broad, but what I often hear is lack of access and lack of affordability. When I hear lack of access, folks in our rural communities are having to drive 45, 60 miles to seek care. Folks in our urban communities live right next door to the hospital and still can't get the care that they need. Insured people are being turned away from services, especially as it relates to mental health care services. We're also seeing increased conversations about access to women's reproductive health care. We know with the Roe versus Wade decision that the decision for how a woman chooses to make a decision on abortion is being questioned in this state and under this current leadership. Also, access to routine reproductive health care. Mamas are having babies in cars. I talked to a mom in one of our urban cities who was pregnant, and she was 4 months pregnant and still hadn't been able to get in to see an OBGYN because of the challenges and access there. And then on the affordability side, we've got folks afraid to retire because they think if they retire, their health insurance may not keep them alive. And so it's a broad-based approach. But the approach from my vantage point is that we've got to make sure that our industry is focused on the people and that the people's needs are getting met when they're purchasing these insurances.
Rural Iowa faces many challenges. I don't need to tell you. A lot of the small counties are losing population, losing young people. The economy is struggling. Do you have some specific ideas for improving some of these rural areas in Illinois or Iowa?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, when we talk about increasing the vitality of the farmers in our communities, giving them a fighting chance, opening up opportunities for markets, that will be good for our rural communities, and that's the feedback that I'm hearing from our rural communities, uplifting the small business owner. Many of our town squares exist, and they're vibrant because of the small business. And then there's the natural resource side of our rural communities, the great parks that we have throughout the state, and just the incredible landscape that exists that brings in tourism all over the country. Well, we want to strengthen that. That means we have to do a stronger job of cleaning our water. We're getting a great deal of resources from the Biden administration right now to do just that. But I believe that we need leadership who's going to prioritize the use of those dollars and making a direct impact on the people with all of those dollars. The other part of it is that I want to make sure that we've got park rangers on our state parks, so that we can not only keep people safe in those parks, but we can increase the vitality in folks' experience at those parks. Again, opportunities for economic growth. When I'm in our rural communities and there's businesses near those businesses benefit from people being at those parks. They don't benefit when they're not there. And other aspects of our rural community that we can do a stronger job of is increasing the availability of housing. We see a great deal of dilapidated housing in our rural communities that need repair or that we just got to reconstruct. But we also see the absence of housing, but the demand for jobs. If we want people to be able to live, work, and play in their communities, then housing is critical to that. I'm in Polk County, and we have the luxury of being able to say that in some of our communities throughout Polk County. But in our rural communities, we don't see that all the time. People have to commute 40 miles to go to work, commute 20 miles to take their kids to childcare or school, commute 60 miles to go to a hospital or to go to a doctor's appointment at that. And so housing is critical if we want to make sure we're creating the placemaking that Iowans deserve to see. And our rural communities should not be distant from the idea that I can, wait a minute, go to sleep in my community. I could wake up and go to work in my community. I could come home and then go to dinner in my community. That is critical. That builds communities, strengthens communities, and it builds communities, as John Norwood, Secretary of Ag candidate, Democratic Secretary of Ag candidate, often says, that are built to last, building communities that are built to last. And we have the ability to do that in the state. So from my vantage point, we might as well. And it starts in our rural community.
In 60 seconds, Deidre, a final question. What make your case, like the closing statement to the jury? Why should voters elect you? What's your competitive advantage? In 60 seconds, please.
We've overcome challenges in this state that date all the way back to the inception of our state becoming a part of the union. We have not only overcome challenges, but we have been leaders throughout this state related to education, healthcare, economy. This is a state that was once number one in education, and we were number one because of not only our investment in education, but our preparation for our students. You know, I want us to be able to compete in this state again, not just as it relates to education, but in all facets, because our Iowa kids are fit to produce a brighter future, not only for this state, but for the country. And if we're going to give ourselves a fighting chance, we must give our students a fighting chance, so that they have a future they can be proud of. And it starts in making a critical decision in this election cycle. Our current governor is not leading us down a path that's good and a brighter future for the state. I intend to do so. And I would love for people to consider learning more about my race and joining in this process, because this campaign is about the people. And Iowa has always led by the people.
Deidre DeGere, thank you so much for being our guest today on WVIK and Heartland Politics. It's been a very good interview and a lot of good information there for voters to consider as Election Day approaches. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.